Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Teich. The economy was one of the issues that shaped voter trends around Wisconsin and the country earlier this week. Here in the Badger State, unemployment numbers have reached historic lows in many places, though income growth has not always kept pace.
However, even with what economists would term full employment, there are some people who still find it hard to find work. That's the case with adults with autism spectrum disorders, the vast majority of whom are unemployed or underemployed in the Milwaukee area.
But one local organization is trying to change that dynamic by tapping into some of the strengths that individuals on the autism spectrum possess. Mark Fairbanks is co-founder and director of the group Islands of Brilliance, and he's with us in the studio now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
We ought to start with just having you tell the story of why you conceived of and how you came to found Islands of Brilliance.
Sure. It goes back quite a few years now. My son, at the age of just before 3 years old, was identified on the autism spectrum. And our story is very similar to most parents' stories who have a child on the spectrum, is that at the time when you're trying to emotionally deal with the diagnosis and the anxiety and fear and heartbreak around that, a lot of times what comes out of that process is a prognosis. And in our case, a neurologist told us our son Harry wouldn't be ready for first grade and that we should basically forget about college. So you can imagine, as a parent and going through those other emotions, I think the thing that triggered was anger and frustration. And we responded by saying, he will be ready for first grade and we'll determine what he's capable of doing. And there's no real roadmap, and to this day, I don't think, for parents when their child is identified. So there was a lot of figuring out to do. And luckily, we were, early intervention education was available for Harry, and the teachers there impressed on my wife, Margaret, that getting him to communicate would help with his behaviors and communication, and a lot of his behaviors were born out of the frustration of not being able to communicate. So at the time, Margaret and I had very different careers. I was in advertising and design as a creative director, and Margaret was a on-camera actress and voiceover talent. And she leaned on her acting and improv skills to kind of connect with Harry.
I was just going to say that it sounds like actually the two of you were had nicely complementary skills.
As it worked out, yeah, that at that time that, his world was Thomas the Tank Engine. So generally, kids on the spectrum will have a very narrow, very deep subject matter interest, and his happened to be trained. So his world revolved around watching videos and, playing with the wooden trains. And whatever Margaret did, it really didn't connect until she kind of got down on the floor and started talking to the trains. And then there was this moment of recognition. And so what she, brilliantly gathered there was if she made learning and teaching moments about trains, that Harry would pay attention and spend longer on them. So this was not by any means a miracle, but he incrementally made growth. And if you made math or handwriting around that subject, he would spend longer amounts of time on it.
Narrow and deep, i.e. an Island of Brilliance.
Exactly. So that's eventually where the name, spilled out of. So he made progress, and then I noticed by the age of 7 or 8 that he was spending a lot of time on YouTube watching, like, stop-motion Lego videos. And he was posting in the threads. At age 7 or 8. And I thought that was really interesting, because where it might be difficult for him to have a peer-to-peer conversation at school, he was completely comfortable using technology to express himself, to form relationships, things like that. And I kind of file that, in the back of my head. And then he was watching me do some work in Adobe Illustrator one day as a designer, and he wanted to try it. So I literally gave him 5 minutes of instruction and then left him alone. And a half hour later, he came back, said, "Dad, come look what I did." And he had drawn this Thomas character using professional software you know, elementary drawing, but obviously recognizable. But the interesting thing is he picked up tools I hadn't shown him. So he's intuitively grasped the software to create what he wanted to make. And, you know, how ideas come about, I know, but, you know, I talked to Mario. I said, what if we, you know, use subject matter interest, paired kids one-on-one, let them use their creativity to tell stories and develop social skills. And, you know, what, by then she was a special ed teacher. What, you know, what would that look like? So that's when this idea for Islands of Brilliance came about. And eventually we tested it here in Milwaukee at Discovery World with 7 students back in 2012, 7 design mentors. We didn't know whether people would want to volunteer for this. And it was immediately a success and has just kind of grown by word of mouth, not only in the with families, but in the volunteer community. I mean, the amount of volunteer commitment we've received is just it kind of blows me away.
Talk about the mentorship role. What makes a good mentor in this work?
Our workshops are kind of structured in art, design, and technology. So they'll range from art projects to design around the student's area of expertise into more STEM-related things, whether that's, 3D modeling, printing, coding, things like that. From a mentorship standpoint, what we ask is that you have empathy and patience, and that you're willing just to kind of go where the kids' interests are. And what we have found is that that is a very profound relationship that happens, because many times the volunteer starts to see themselves then at a younger age, and the fearlessness of the creativity of the students and the approach and the process re-energizes them in a way that I don't think they expect. So our volunteer retention rate or repeat rate is 70% plus, and we constantly have new people coming into the program. And what it also does is I think our volunteers learn, we select them for empathy and patience, but it builds more of those skills that then spill back over into their place of work, which is hugely valuable to the community. And I've heard this, you know, from different leaders at agencies and corporate departments, that is the case.
They go back and they deal with their coworkers in a different way.
In a different way, yeah, yeah.
As you say, there was not a roadmap, and, mm-hmm. and there might still not be a roadmap. Were there concerns as you developed this that the approach for one person might mm-hmm. not be the ideal approach for another?
Right. There's a phrase that if you've met one individual on the spectrum, you've met one. I think our approach to meet them where their interests are, you automatically have buy-in there, right? So that if you match that subject matter interest with kind of a one-to-one, let's call it a best buddy, which is another term, with technology, that you're matching things that align well with where individuals on the spectrum, where their strengths are, all right? So there is no one-size-fits-all, but I think what we try to do is we treat every individual and every student we have with the respect that they do. We approach them based on their strengths and interests. And we also, you know, we challenge them in good, positive ways that often they may not be given credit for in, let's say, a regular education classroom setting, because we provide a level of support that schools can't. And that's no knock against, you know, schools. It's just that we have to find more and more solutions to address, you know, the challenges that we face, and it's upon us, I think, a lot of times as citizens to figure those out. And I think that's especially true of this emergent population, as parents getting involved, trying like, what's the long term likelihood for employment and independence for our child? So, you know, we have to kind of get involved in what that solution looks like.
Well, and in the way that the doing this work has some carryover for the mentors mm-hmm. in their own workplace. Do you find that this work also has carryover for the young people that extends to how they approach school?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, often they're the most articulate individuals about it. You know, we have some students who can talk about the process they learned and the confidence that it's built in them. And we see it not only in the school, but also in, you know, we've got one student who I think originally was told, you know, he won't participate in team sports. Well, now he's his team went to state cross country last week and he's on varsity, and his parents just sent me a video of the banquet where they got, you know, Will a GoPro and all this stuff. So we see that that this learning experience that we create spills over into many aspects of their lives, and that's what we want to see. And I think that's the most rewarding thing, is that you know, the experience that we had with our son Harry now is affecting, you know, multiple families in ways that I don't think we ever saw. And that's the best thing about it.
Well, and what's a great outcome to you might not necessarily be exactly the outcome somebody else hopes for.
That's exactly right. Yep.
What's the age range of young people that Islands of Brilliance works with?
We start as young as age 8, and some parents will lobby to get their 7-year-old in. The reason that is, so early intervention education is critical. So we look at this as early intervention employment. So the younger we can start students on learning these skills, building confidence, the social skills that are embedded in the workshops, it gives them a longer on-ramp, if you will, towards those successful outcomes, whether they're design or STEM related or they're just, you know, in something else. We also, this is an interesting thing, we're calling our workshops age agnostic. You know, you'll have 9-year-olds in with, you know, somebody over 20, and often parents asked, when are you going to do something 18 plus? So we asked our son Harry, and he was 18 by the time we asked him. I said, how do you feel about being in the workshops with younger kids? And he gave it some thought, and he said, I think it's actually good because we become role models for the younger kids. And that's like, what a beautiful way of looking at it. And I think as whether it's adults or educators, we see it in the workshops where everybody's helping each other out. Like the level of work has gone up. The interactions during, we do presentations after every workshop. All of it has just gone out. And I attribute that to role modeling between these peers that are range from age 8 to, you know, 26.
Well, and so how long do kids or mm-hmm. or young adults who are part of this stay with it? And what kind of follow-up is there, you know, right. after the workshops are done?
Sure. So we started in fall of 2012, and we still have one student who's done it since then and been with the same mentor. So that's 6 years going, right? Often, I think what we preach is this is reps, right? Like you don't do soccer once and then I'm going to switch sport. So the more that you do these workshops, the skill level increases not only technically and creatively, but in those very important social collaboration, interpersonal skills. So what we're approaching now, we're very excited because in 2019, we are launching what we're calling Digital Academy and then Brilliant Studio. So this is kind of this next level of the transition from what originally was seasonal workshops to monthly workshops now to a more structured learning work experience that is preparing our candidates for employment. You know, the long-term goal is really to kind of cut into the estimated 90% under unemployment rate for young adults on the spectrum, and there's going to have to be a lot of different avenues that we, you know, try to tackle that, and this is one of them.
So when you think back to that moment when Harry was not quite 3 and right. and think of where this has all gone, mm-hmm. it must be night and day.
Yeah, it's hard to remember those early days and how difficult they were because he's now a junior at UWM. He's in Peck School of the Arts and designed visual communications. He's got a part-time job at the Gast House, you know, that he applied for himself. And when I think back to Margaret working with him at the dining room table on a simple math sheet when he was in, you know, first grade, and it would take 2 hours, the ground that we've covered and what he's accomplished on his own and the goals that he has for himself, it's just, it's just unimaginable that that this has occurred. Because he's just come so far, and I don't, you know, in your heart of hearts, you believe in that. When it happens, it's like, it's remarkable. So we're proud of him, but we're as equally as proud of the students who are in our program, who are showing the same growth, and it looks different for all of them. And that's how you have to, like, kind of, you know, like you may see growth socially, or and you may see it in technical or creativity skills. But the main thing is that, helping our students and individuals kind of achieve these goals and progress and grow is really impactful.
Well, congratulations to Harry. And thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Thank you, Mitch. Thanks for having me on.
Mark Fairbanks is co-founder and director of Islands of Brilliance. You can find more information about the organization's programs and its Friday night gala event at wuwm.com.